Hello, hello, GM, everybody. So happy to be here with you all. Welcome back to another episode of If You Know, You Know, the show for Web3 creators and enthusiasts. I am your host, Belle, and each week I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring you the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. Nothing we ever say is ever financial advice, and it's always really important to do your own research. If this is your first time joining us, we do this show live on X every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's 2 p.m. for all the people out there in New York, Eastern Standard Time, but you can also find it on any of your favorite streaming platforms. I am super excited about today's conversation. There are some people in this world, in this life that like radiate niceness and kindness and good people. And to me, the guest that we have today, Soul Curry R. Ishita, is one of those people that just radiate not just a beautiful artist, but a beautiful soul. And I am so happy to have you on here. Oh, hey, Soul and Soul Curry. And I just, that was not a pun intended. But I'm going to laugh at my own corny joke right there. And and like caught that afterwards. Listen, you are a beautiful soul. And that is a pun intended. My God, what a horrible start to the show. Welcome, everybody. I don't always do these dad jokes, but when I do, I mean, you know, you get the pleasure of being there at the front row. How are you today?
I'm well. Oh, my God. This is... Well, I was just going to say, bring on the dad jokes. My teenager is really into dad jokes, and she keeps sending them to me. I mean, we sit right next to each other sometimes at dinner, and she's sending me dad jokes on Instagram and all sorts of things. So, yeah, bring on the dad jokes. I love it.
And I'm well. That's so funny.
That was such a wonderful introduction. I mean, it just made me feel warm and fuzzy, and I feel exactly the same way about you. I mean, one of my favorite Web3 humans, collector. I like to think of you as a friend, even though we haven't really met in person yet. But, you know, you're just somebody I absolutely admire and love. And just to see your journey over the past couple of years has been just incredible. Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on here, and I appreciate everything that you're saying. Absolutely, I feel the same way. There are just some people that you know even before you know them. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, are you going to Art Basel?
I am trying. Yeah.
I hope that you're there and we can meet each other.
I hope so.
Art Basel is like right around the corner, and the horrible thing about the NFT space, if you've been in it for a while, is that all of these organizations, all of these people, you know, make these events, and they never tell you until like 3 weeks beforehand when it's going to happen, what's going to happen, who's going to be there. And so planning for it is terrible and really, really hard to be able to plan to be there. But I hope that you are able to make it, and I hope that our schedules, you know, are able to collide and actually see each other, because we've been circling around each other's presence for a long time. And so hopefully we can either make it then or perhaps NFT NYC.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at some things, you know, going on, you know, around that time. And I've been, I don't know whether it's going to come to fruition, but I'm definitely, you know, all guns blazing. I'm trying my best. If not now, then definitely NFT NYC.
Talk about all guns blazing. Like, you are so, I feel like you're always operating on that level. You know, I want to talk about your journey in NFTs and in digital art and just art itself completely. One of the things that I've always admired about you is your presence in a lot of different communities within the NFT space. You know, I know that you're like an active participant, not just in the art world, but you're actually also active in the other side, in the PFP collection side of it. There's, Gabe Weiss has his project also, and I know that you have also helped out to like teach classes and you know, on their spaces and inside of their Discord chats, which is solely 100% squarely participating in the NFT community and helping out, you know, helping out other creators and other artists. In my opinion, there are two different ways to handle one career in the NFT space. You know, you can either be an a standby participant or just kind of stand on the outskirts of it and watch everything happen. Not everybody takes it upon themselves to like be squarely in the middle of it and have more of an active role in it. And you definitely are one of those people that I see participating on Twitter spaces, making the connections, teaching the classes, et cetera, et cetera. And so I really wanted to get into that with you because I think that that is how artists not just help themselves as a person, you know, of growing and networking, et cetera, but also as an artist coming into the space. I think that there's a lot that can be learned there. So I said a whole lot. I really want to get to know you better. It's an intimate room, intimate space. Tell us what inspires you to continue showing up every day?
Oh, wow. What inspires me? You know, it's just art inspires me and people inspire me. Let's just put it like that. You know, and you mentioned participating in communities and being an active participant in the communities that I really vibe with. And, you know, Gabe is one of them. And the Bored Ape Canada Club is one of them. I've been doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes as well, because I really vibe with the people. It's not just about the brand name or whatever, but I really feel very passionate about the people that are building. I've got to know them on a personal level. Gabe and I've been friends way before NFTs. So, having that symbiotic relationship has been really important. And one of the things that I completely believe in is doing something without an ask. You know, I don't want to just show up when I have a drop coming or when I have something coming and I want something, but just show up because I really love to show up. I love my friends. I want to be there whenever I can. I will show up whenever it's possible. I will definitely do something. I don't need anything in return, but I just want to be there supporting because I know how hard it is to be seen sometimes. And, you know, if I could just, you know, push that along and make somebody else feel seen or just heard or whatever, give somebody that. That is something that really gets me going. What inspires me? I don't know. Everything inspires me. I'm actually an introvert. So, you know, being on spaces, coming out and talking to people and really coming out of talking about the art, marketing it has been a learning process over the, you know, so many years. So it's not something that came very naturally to me in the beginning. I love just sitting in my studio, not having to talk to people, not having to do anything, just sitting and creating art. But at the same time, I have got so much out of being out there, being a participant. And I feel like sometimes you really need to get out of your comfort zone, shake it all out and try something new. And for me, NFTs was something, trying something new, taking a risk, exploring a technology. And, I just had such a wonderful experience being part of, making friends here, being part of the communities, listening to conversations, not just to be heard, but, really understand different perspectives, the PFP perspective, the fine art perspective, the curator, the curation perspective. So, there's so many ways to look at it from the broader perspective. And I feel like for me as an artist, that is very important. And that is what keeps me going.
That's such a good way of putting it of, everything inspires you and people inspire you and from all different ways. I want to know so much about that, but I really want to take it back. Like, take us back. You mentioned that you and Gabe were friends even before NFTs, right? And I know that Gabe's story has a lot to do with the political scene, having been in the political scene and having had a lot of interaction with people and being inspired by what was happening there and the social services side of things and becoming an artist. How do you and when in your life is that artist kind of spark, you know, turned on for you?
The art spark was always there, you know, growing up. I come from India, so my roots came from there. I live in Canada. I've traveled all over the world. So I like to think of myself as a global citizen that has one foot in the East and one foot in the West. So I like to think of myself as somebody who's been around the block, who's seen things, seen cultures, experienced different things. But I grew up in India to parents who are medical doctors. My father's a surgeon. My mother was also, you know, a gynecologist. So, you know, for me, I grew up with science. I grew up with medicine. This was the conversation. And I knew very early on that I was different. I did not want to go that route. But I still studied, you know, science. I wanted to, you know, do my dad proud. My dad had high hopes that I would follow in his footsteps, being the oldest, being the older daughter. So, and he was crushed that I decided to, you know, chuck medical school and become a full-time artist. And at that time, it was completely unheard of. It was like it came as the biggest shock to my parents. And I always felt like the black sheep who was trying to go against the grain. And going against the grain means that you really have to have conviction in yourself that what you're going to be doing is something that is your calling, that is 100% you. And I, when I decided that, you know, I want to study art, it was a very, I had no idea what art entailed. I had no experience with art. I was studying physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics. So from there to go into fully fine art was a huge transition for me. And I was terrible. The first year, I was absolutely terrible when I went down art school. The first year, I was the second to the bottom of my batch. And I took that as a challenge. I was like, how can I make myself get up there? How can I be the better, you know, be better at what I'm doing? And slowly and steadily, I just worked relentlessly. And I fell in love with the whole process. I fell in love with art. I fell in love with art history. I fell in love with techniques and methods and tools. And because I went down the art school route and I learned everything hands-on, I mean, this was before we had internet, before we learned things on the computer. So we would do typography by cutting out letters and doing, you know, things by hand, silk screen printing, lithography, photography. I studied it all, developed photographs in a dark room. So, you know, I did stuff the old fashioned way. And then technology came and I was able to kind of, you know, adapt technology as well. So I have this huge respect for where things come from, the roots of something and how, you know, how things have developed over time, you know, how the masters have come up or, you know, how even, you know, the paint, the pigments that we use today is so different from what used to be there before. So I have a, you know, love for that. And I brought that on, you know, I went down the art school route and then I went on to do my master's in fine arts because there were just 5 seats and my professor thought that I would be a very good candidate. He thought, you know, I was academically strong and he forced me. I did not want to do my master's in fine arts, but he kind of coerced me. And at least my parents were happy that, okay, fine, if not a doctor, at least she'll have a master's degree. So it was kind of to appease my parents as well. But I loved my master's program. I was the only woman in that program. There were just 5 people selected from all over India. And I happened to be one of them. And one of the things that I studied was communication design, about how do you use design as a communication tool? How do you bring the viewer into the work itself? It's not just about your expression, but until you're communicating that expression across, that's when you become a successful artist. So we had a lot of, you know, work that I had to do along that. And it was somewhere around my master's program where we had to do a dissertation on we had to pick a movement in the art history move, I mean, in the art movement, and kind of talk about how it was still contemporary. And I picked up cubism, and for 2 years, that's all I did. I immersed myself into cubism, learned the ABCs of it, and tried to relate it with what was happening in the Indian art scene, in how I saw it going towards the future. And it became so much part of who I am. It became, you know, something that I just lived, breathed, and dreamed all the time. And I just fell in love with the whole way of looking at things. And at that same time, you know, when the Cubist movement was going on in the West, the Indian art movement was also happening, and the Bengal School of Art had so many parallels with the Cubist movement. So I grew up with that kind of art. I was exposed to seeing Cubist art, faces, eyes, really curvaceous bodies. So, you know, that was something that I was very comfortable looking at. And that slowly and steadily started infusing, you know, bringing that into my work. And, you know, in the beginning, I did everything. I did photography, I did realistic work, I did, I made ads for companies, I did everything, commercial work, graphic design. But I knew that, you know, there was going to be a point of time where I would, you know, want to keep doing my own work along with that. And so 20 years, I worked a full-time job while fueling my dreams to be an artist. And, finally I took the plunge and did it. It took me a while to call myself an artist full time because, you know, in growing up with so many barriers and going against the grain, calling myself an artist was also a learning experience because you didn't just get to call yourself an artist and have people take you seriously. So I had to really struggle to get there. And, I really believed in myself. I told myself if I can do it. So by the time I graduated from my master's program, I was top of my class, and I never looked back. I told myself it's got to be a lot of hard work, a lot of, you know, and there's going to be stuff that happens and, you know, all the things life throws at you, but you've got to keep on, you know, believing in yourself and go on doing what you love.
Wow. I mean, wow. I'm blown away by how multifaceted you are, you know, and it's, first of all, I've had the pleasure of, you know, of interviewing and being able to talk to a lot of people, and not everyone has that life experience of being in the digital art space, right? It's perhaps something that they are maybe just starting the career on, or have gone maybe a completely different route. But one of the things that I really admire about your particular story is that you have done a lot of different things. You had a master's in finance. Excuse me, what? You know, how does that align with now being a successful digital artist? It's definitely not the mold that one expects to hear, right? It's definitely not the mold that one expects that that we would come across. And I love that because it shows how multifaceted an artist could be, a woman could be, a badass person can be. So kudos to you in every aspect of it, of killing it and of always going against the grain for something that you believed in. So, you know, that's something that is true and dear to my heart. So I love it. I want to dive more into, okay, you've done all of that. And so how does NFTs fall into that? But before you answer that, I want to take just a quick pause and encourage everybody to retweet the room, get some more people in here. Appreciate you being here. We do this show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I am so grateful that you took the time to join us today. I always say you literally could have been anywhere else and you're here, and I appreciate that. One thing that I didn't mention at the beginning of the show, I was waiting for a couple of more people to show up, and that is, did you know that this show is tied to the POAPs that I just pinned up on the top? So if you know, you know, is powered by Tau BRC20s. And I want to emphasize that because this week, if you know, you know that BRC20s and Ordinals is popping. One of the things that's like really moving right now within the NFT space. And up on top on the Jumbotron here, I have pinned instructions on how to be able to get today's Space Caps Po app. For every 5 that you get, you actually get an airdrop or eligible for an airdrop of 420 Tau BRC20 tokens. So if you got left behind on the train on BRC20s, get on it, because the more that you listen to the show, if you know, you know, the higher your percentage is, your chance of being able to get those BRC20 tokens. If you have been following at all what's happening on that side of you know, of the house, then you know that it's booming, it's popping. People are making a lot of money and a lot of technology is being built on it. So that's all I'm going to say about BRC20s and about the ordinal side of it. I hope that if you haven't already, that you start collecting the POAPs every single week. We do a POAP specifically for the artist or for the speaker that we have on today. So I don't know if you've taken a look at yours, but it's up there on the Space Caps and it is amazing. I always love the art that we have included in there. So, all right, promotional break is done. Let's talk about your NFT journey. Like, how did you even discover that digital art was a thing, and what was it about it that you thought, okay, maybe I can do something here?
So my journey with digital art started way back in in 1999, I would say 98 99, when my full-time day job was in broadcast graphics. So for 20 years, I've worked with some of the biggest network news channels around the world. And I would design what you visually see on some of the biggest news names that you can think of. So think of, you know, whatever you see for the brand identity, from the opening sequence to everything that is visually there, from the sets to the backdrops to the weather to elections, sports, everything that you would see for the Olympics, for example, was done by somebody like me. And for 20 years, I did that. And I started working with digital art, with Photoshop, with discrete logic softwares, with 3D softwares very, very early on when they were just coming in. And over the course of these, so many years, I became a specialist in, certain things or working with certain softwares. And because it was such a niche field that I was working in, and it was still design, it was still, I had to visualize, come up with brand identities, think of what, the entire package for US presidential elections, for example, would look like, and work on that, but I always would come back home and really try to shed that digital persona and try and get back to real basics. Like, I would really get back to ink, or I would get back to just watercolors or whatever I could lay my hands on, because I really wanted to. I always believed that, I really needed to get my hands dirty to become an artist and to keep being true to who I was. So, my digital journey continued because I was designing for all the network television shows. And then, I was moonlighting as an artist. And my moonlighting name was called Soul Curry. So that's how I started Soul Curry Art, because, I was Ishita for the companies that I was working for, but I could never really take ownership of the work, because again, we had non-disclosure agreements, we had so many things, and we talk about not having ownership of your work, and I've had that happen to me for 20 years. I couldn't take ownership of the stuff that was on Times Square in 2012, for example, and you couldn't even put it on your portfolio because you were working for a very well-known company and they didn't want to say that they had hired you to do the work for them. So I struggled with that, but I was also very comfortable with designing and using digital softwares. So when I started hearing about NFTs was, about 2019, I started hearing about, crypto, and I kind of got interested, but I really never took the time to really understand it. And then, of course, the pandemic happened, and then we all had time on our hands. And I started hearing more and more about, this technology. And it was February 2021. In a Clubhouse room, I just, got an invite for Clubhouse. I joined Clubhouse. And the first person's room that I ended up was Farooq's room. And he was talking a language that was completely foreign to me. I remember it was late at night, and he was hosting this gigantic room. And I just happened to what the hell is he talking about? And then I started, trying to understand, go to more spaces, go to more rooms, trying to find people that I vibed with. And the stuff that I was hearing about, this being a digital renaissance, it's about celebrating digital art, it's about ownership, it was about, having proof on the blockchain, sounded extremely exciting for me. And for somebody who's been trying to bridge her, her traditional artwork and her digital art practice for so many years, this felt like, I was at the right place at the right time. Very serendipitous. I was like, this is what's meant to be. And I just jumped hook, line, and sinker to just learn more. And I was like a sponge the first couple of months. And then I started seeing some of the favorite artists that I was following, drop NFTs. And I'm like, let me give it a try. And I really understood what the technology was and whether it really fit for me or not. Whether, I really had to ask myself, is this who I am? Do I see myself doing this forward, going forward? I didn't want to just do something as a flash in the pan and forget it. I really had to have conviction in it. Because I had really built up my brand by then. Soulcary Art, I had built it up over the last, so many years. And I told myself that I needed to do something that I absolutely was sure that I was going to be able to sustain going forward. And then I just absolutely loved it. I fell in love with NFTs, and I'm like, I didn't look back. And yeah, the rest, I still do my traditional art. I still do my digital art. But I like to think of myself as somebody who successfully bridges the two worlds together.
That makes so much sense to me. I think that it is incredible that you have that experience, like firsthand experience of having done, an incredible piece, some really art that, was big and noticed and seen, et cetera, and not being able to take the credit for it, right? It's one of those things, it's one of those backbone reasons of why the NFT technology or the blockchain technology for digital art cases and the provenance and the blockchain proof, et cetera. It's one of those reasons that exists. So I'm really curious from your perspective, what is the most exciting thing about the technology? If you could put your finger on it, let's get nerdy for a second. What do you think is the thing that most attracts you, that you're most excited about?
I mean, I'll tell you one thing that most excited me in the beginning was definitely provenance. Because as somebody, I've had some of my biggest pieces and my most successful pieces plagiarized and sold by third-party companies in foreign countries for a pittance. And I've been trying to fight plagiarism. I've been trying to fight, for IP rights and really educate people about why it matters, why IP and copyright matters. And I just could not find, the more I kept digging, the more, it was just a slew of, just rubbish around, people were throwing around. I mean, it was fair game. Anything that you would put out on the internet was, fair game to be copied or plagiarized and sold by, third-party companies. And one of the reasons I got into NFTs again was to prove immutable provenance. It was having that timestamp, having that authentication on the blockchain, having that contract on the blockchain that said that, when it was created it, who owns it, and so on. So that was something that excited me the most. And secondly, was definitely ownership. I wanted to have ownership of my work. I wanted that ownership to be present and be transparent even long after I'm gone. I wanted my grandkids or whoever would come later on be able to, you know, see what was the work that she started with, where did she go, what happened, and have that, you know, have that somewhere that is very easily public accessible, have that provenance, have it time stamped, was extremely important to me. And then, of course, you know, then the when I started seeing more and more about, you know, how people are adopting technology, whether it was dynamic NFTs, whether it was, you know, the burn to redeem mechanisms. It was very interesting what was going on, you know, about the different ways people were exploring it. Then we had AI, then we had, you know, there were so many things that I, you know, I got very, very excited about the possibilities that the technology that, you know, this Web3 was giving artists that we really didn't have before. Like for me as a traditional artist, I had a two-dimensional surface. And for me to take that out of two dimensions, put it in AR, for example, bring AI into it, put music, have animation, have it play on these giant screens. I mean, it takes, I mean, art to a different dimension. And you're really limited by just your imagination. You can, if you can imagine it, you can do it. And that is what I felt was the movement that I was seeing. I was very inspired by the kind of art I was seeing around me. And when you're exposed to these kinds of...
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Things, it of course spurns, you know, different ideas in your own head. You want to take your art further. And I always wanted to think of myself as like a risk taker in the art. I didn't want to do the same thing over and over again and call it, you know, art. But I definitely wanted to have a trajectory, a before, a during, an after, a blue period, a red period, a pink period, for example. So I wanted to go through that whole experience of being an artist. I wanted people to look at my work, say that, oh, this is her early work, and okay, this is what she did now. And, you know, further down the line, I don't know what I'm going to do, but definitely it's going to be something that will bring all these experiences, these stepping stones along the way and make it into something else. So yeah, those are the things that I really thought of consciously. And as the technology is growing, as I'm seeing, I did not understand PFPs, for example, but the more I understood it, more I looked at it from a business point of view, I got very, very excited, got into some of the really big projects, looked at the networking of, you know, side of it, tried to understand the business side of it because nobody had taught me all these things. And yeah, I was very passionate. I'm a very inquisitive, curious learner. Yeah, I'm just really enjoying what I'm seeing and experiencing. Of course, it's not perfect, but then what is, right? It is progress, not perfection, that we're always looking at.
You mentioned IP rights, and I think that is so important. You also mentioned provenance, and you mentioned a lot of other things, but I want to dive into that because from your perspective, what are you doing, if anything at all, to protect yourself from that side, you know, having been plagiarized in the past? I'm sure that that's like even more important to you. And I think that a lot of artists coming into the space, you know, right now, hopefully crossing our fingers, it seems like we're getting a whole lot more interest now, again, right? Booming up a lot more interest. And I would imagine that sooner rather than later, we have new artists trying to break it in the game of figuring out, all right, what does this do for me? How can I use it to my advantage? How can I protect myself from it? So I'm just curious, have you or do you do anything to make sure that that is protected? How do you view IP rights?
I try to understand. First of all, a lot of artists do not understand what, like, it for me, I'm going to give talk about from my experience. I did not understand what was IP when I really first started off, you know, and when I did not know that I needed to protect my IP, that you don't upload high resolution images, you know, things that you have to, you know, sometimes you really need to go through the shit to understand where you went wrong. So and nobody had taught me these things, you know. I just thought just uploading, you know, stuff that, you know, best quality out there would ensure that it was a, you know, people would love that more than anything else. But then the more I realized that, you know, it's very easy to steal IP. People were stealing at least some of my biggest works, and I cannot even tell you how hard those 2 years were when I was finding company after company, company after company, just stealing my ideas, stealing my biggest pieces, you know, exactly as it is. They didn't even bother to alter even the slightest line. You know, they would just take it and just replicate it. And that was a very, very hard thing to swallow. It was very hard. A lot of people kept telling me that, you know, this is, you should consider it flattery. And, you know, it's only when you get plagiarized that you think that you've made it. And it just felt like a violation. It did not feel like anything like that. I had worked 25 years to get here, only to be ripped off. And this was something that was a huge learning experience for me. So I started understanding, how do I protect my, what is IP first of all? What is the difference between intellectual property and copyright? How do I protect myself first as an artist? How do copyright laws vary from country to country? And, you know, all those things I started really understanding and looking into, writing articles, writing blogs, because I felt like if it was happening to me, it's probably happening to a lot of other people as well. And in the process, I realized that, you know, how do I protect my IP? Whenever I create a new piece of work or create a piece of work that is, which I think is a very breakout piece, I copyright register it with, because I'm in Canada, I register it with the Canadian Copyright Agency. Even if you don't register it, even if you don't go the extra mile, anything that an artist creates is automatically considered their IP. But I go the extra mile of getting that certification, getting that copyright number, getting that, you know, that little certificate that says that, you know, when have I done that? And I do that for my traditional art as well, and also some of my biggest pieces, which I think are, you know, going to be, you know, my hallmark pieces, let's say. And of course, with NFTs, the IP, the authentication happens on the blockchain. But whenever I sell something, for example, I have licensing agreements, so I have very strict, you know, rules about retaining the IP, or if somebody really wants to buy the IP, it comes at a price, or it has to happen through a contract, through an agreement. I also, you know, make, you know, have checks in place about how many pieces, what are the licensing rights of, you know, whenever I work with brand partnerships. And I've had to learn this the hard way, unfortunately. But because I learned this the hard way, I am, you know, always on the back foot, looking out for myself more than anything. And that's why I feel like it's so important to keep talking about IP, keep talking about, you know, copyright, keep talking about not really infringing on other people's IP without permission, even if it's just sharing a post on a social media. I mean, I really like when people really ask me before doing that, rather than just assume that it's flattery. So yeah, these are just some of my thoughts. I'm sorry I'm rambling on, but I feel very, very passionate about about this. And as an artist, I was never taught these things, and I had to learn it the hard way.
No, I'm letting you ramble on because it's all incredibly important things. I'm taking notes on what I think that perhaps later we can dive into a different Twitter space or X space on, because I think that, to your point, no one ever teaches you these things, you know, not just from like the artist's perspective, but anyone participating in the Web3 space, you learn by accident, you learn by listening into conversations, you learn by just talking to people. There is no class, there is nobody that's truly like, all right, we're going to talk about this today. And it is by experience. You've been around for a minute now with digital art and also with NFTs, and you've been able to, you know, be successful in the space. And so it's really important that your voice is heard, but that your message and your experience and what you have learned and what's important to you, because you're right. Not everyone knows the difference between IP and copyright. I mean, I wrote it down because I think that it is incredibly important.
Exactly. And one thing, you know, like, I feel like, you know, just because a lot of people, I mean, whenever I talk about copyright, one thing that definitely comes up is we would want to learn. We want to copy and learn from somebody, or, you know, we copy the masters, or we are copying somebody's style. that is perfectly all right. There is a fine line between really copying to learn and understand and you know, for educational purposes, and copying something exactly to sell, you know, to monetize. So, you know, that is where the infringement happens on somebody's intellectual property. So when you're doing that fine line, that nuance is sometimes very, very nuanced, let's say. It's not very obvious. But at the same time, we have to be very mindful. And I feel like in the West, we are still a lot mindful. But for a lot of countries where, you know, in Asia, a lot of countries in the developing world, I do not see this education. And for me, it's very important that we keep talking about it. I keep bringing it to the focus because it's still happening. It still happens to me every single day. And it is not fun.
I think that it's so like cool that you are willing to share those experiences, right? Of what it is that you've learned, because to your point, a lot of the people end up learning it the hard way. We've seen it happen a lot on the PFP side, which is something that I wanted to talk to you about as well, because, you know, going back to my original statements on this, I know that you're an active participant in like communities and NFT PFP project communities, which is really, really cool. You don't see that all the time, but that particular problem has happened more than once, right? Where we have seen the PFP projects that come out and mint out and make the founders millionaires end up being infringement on the art, you know, maybe either stolen or borrowed or not very clear art that has come out. And those situations spark these type of situations or these type of conversations that it's like, all right, well, if I am an artist in the space that is approached by a PFP project or by any project at all, what are some of the things that I should be looking at? And what are some of the things that I should be protecting? And how do I protect myself from having that art just completely taken and create and, you know, have a PFP project made out of? There was someone, oh my gosh, it's on the tip of my, with Bueno, I should know this, Pablo, who had that same situation happen to him. So it happens like all of the time. And so I would love to get your take on that. What do you think, having seen all of that, is it a dangerous place for artists to come in and expose themselves to that much risk?
I mean, there is like, I like taking risks as an artist. I love the opportunities that the space presents, but at the same time, as an artist, it's very important to know exactly what is going to happen with the art that you give somebody. I mean, a lot of us, we just feel that excitement of getting the art out there or having that sale or having, you know, that brand partnership. That initial euphoria is what we are riding on, but we really don't see about, you know, what if it becomes a $1 million industry? What if it, I mean, you never know what's going to happen with it. So, you know, ask yourself these questions, have very, you know, talk to other people. I mean, I feel like sometimes it's really nice to have these conversations because this is the side that, again, like I was saying, nobody really talks about. And, you know, what do you, like when you're being approached by somebody, what would you want to do? Do you want to sell the IP? If you want to sell the IP, maybe you can sell it at a higher price. Do you want to do it as a licensing agreement? What would you license it on? And, you know, would you want some royalty on it? How do you go about that, you know, that process? What are the checks and balances? What would make you happy, you know, over time? Maybe you don't really care about this and it's fine. You know, a lot of people, I mean, I know incidences where, you know, the students are being approached in Asian countries and being asked to create something for $50 that then becomes something huge, you know, in other countries. So it's just sad. I feel like for an artist, for somebody, you know, who's just a student in a developing country, $50 is a lot of money. And for them, that they look at that particular number, but not about, you know, how can they protect themselves. I mean, of course, for them, they'll keep making more art, but at the same time, they're also being taken advantage of. So I feel like we need to have these, I take it very personally because I've seen so many red flags. I've seen so many people, being on the receiving end of this bullshit that I feel like protecting and having contracts in place, knowing exactly what you're giving away and what do you permit? Do you permit it to be shared on social media? Do you permit it to be shared on, there's so many different ways of, looking at it. Sometimes an ironclad contract is what you need. And I'm happy to talk about it some more if anybody wants, some whatever tips, and we can have a conversation on this some other time as well.
So with that, I'm going to open up the room. And if anybody does have a question to deep dive into that, feel free to raise your hand and let's get it out there. I would love to talk about that. On the PFP side, there are so many different aspects of the NFT community, of the digital art community, and sometimes they are siloed. The community side of it, if you will, the PFP side of it, if you will, is very siloed from the art and one of one kind of side. But there's so much that can be missed, which is the community and the people and the networking, having been a part of one of those communities, right? Of a PFP collection side of it, which you kind of spoke about. And so I would love for you to maybe expand on how you have been successful at building your network of peers, of friends, of teachers, of inspiration, because I've always been a big believer that how you find and build your tribe, if you will, is so important. And I think that you've done a really good job of that. So talk to us about how that you were able to do that.
To be honest, in the beginning of if you asked me this question in 2021, I would have said that I am not getting into any PFP project. I'm just an artist, and I'm not going to do projects or collect projects at all.
I want to stop you there. I want to stop you there because that is exactly why I'm asking you the question. That's exactly why, because that is the typical answer. Like, that's exactly the typical answer that I get of like, oh no, Belle, I'm here to talk about art. Like, I'm just an artist. I don't really partake in that side of the world, but you do. So it's like, all right, talk to me about that. How'd that happen?
And it just happened because I was paying attention and I was looking at what some of the biggest projects were building here. And the word community, for an artist means a different thing. We could have very small communities. We could have tight-knit communities. But for larger projects, how are they building a business around, their product, for example? And I really wanted to understand that from the inside. And that was kind of one of the reasons I got into, understanding some of the PFP projects. There are two reasons I kind of get into a PFP project. A, if I really, really like the people behind it, if I really 100% align with the values of the people behind it, I am in 100%. Number two, if I feel like they're building something that I would love to understand from a deeper perspective, from a networking perspective, understand, how they're doing things, understand how they're building the business step by step. There were the things that, were being thrown, words like roadmap were being thrown about, utility were being thrown about in early 2021. And I really didn't understand the concept until I started experiencing the utility myself, until I went to these events, until I, got the merch or understood what it was like to feel like you're part of this huge club. And of course, when you start becoming part of the club, then, networking opportunities open up. And of course, you've got to be present as well. I mean, I did my, I still love hanging out with a lot of community members that I really vibe with. And we strike up great conversations and it opens up doors. I will not, mince words and say that it is a networking opportunity. It opens up doors. It opens up other things that you really wouldn't have perhaps had access to had you not been in this club, had you not got into this PFP project, had you not met these people. So, you know, some of the finest people I've met, Janine is here. She has an amazing project, Kindred Hearts. It was really a passion project that she put her heart and soul into. Love Gabe. You know, anything that he tells me, Shita, I want you to do this, no question asked. He's my friend. I love him. Love the work. We both fellow cubists in this space, and he can always count on me. So I like that. I like the fact that, you know, we are doing that. I'm part of the yoga ecosystem, and we also have something called Board Club Canada, which are the bored apes that live in Canada. So we have regular meetups. We, you know, network. We know each other by name. It's just so much fun to hang out and have that kind of a shared experience with them. Then they end up becoming collectors. In fact, they were collectors before I got to know them. So it's very interesting that you know, this whole, we all, it's a small space, but we all know each other, help each other out. So when they have an exhibition, they know that, you know, Ishida can perhaps help out. So, you know, it's a symbiotic relationship. And I've also learned so much from being in the community. I've also learned, you know, how people deal with adversity, you know, when projects are not going well, how do you deal with it? How do you address community members who are looking at just the floor price? How do you keep that level-headedness, you know, in a market that goes, you know, swings wildly on both sides? So, you know, there's so many learning experiences, so many ways of looking at it. And for somebody who's a keen observer, I really enjoy looking at it from so many different sides of it. So, you know, I wouldn't say it was just one reason why I got in, but a bit of all these reasons. And looking at it from the inside feels a lot different than looking at it from the outside. It's not really a flex because I don't really rock my ape much, or I don't really do a lot with the other PFPs, but I really enjoy being part of the ecosystem.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because you're taking advantage and recognizing, like, being even open to the fact that a PFP project is not always, you know, a degen shitty group of crypto bros, if you will, right? That's what a lot of people would have you think, I think. And so, you know, and I mean, hey, I'll be the first to admit that sometimes it is that, but you got to be open to the fact that sometimes it's truly unlocking a network effect, a network opportunity, an opportunity for you to find your tribe, right? And people that like know their stuff. One of the things that I'm super impressed about Yuga, specifically Bored at Yacht Club, and that's just because it's one of the biggest ones, obviously, but you know, so many other ones, but it's full of people that no matter what you want, like professionally done, if you're a business owner, right, and you want something professionally done, you can tap into that social network and find someone that in one time of their life was an expert or is an expert on that particular thing. But in order for you to get there, you have to open up your mind to the possibility that network and that social aspect of it is equally as important as anything else that you may have a network, you know, in real life. So I think that you said it really well.
And I think PFP projects are building in public. They're building these huge you know, businesses around their project. They're raising money. They're looking at things to do going forward. So, you know, they're also offering utility in the present in different ways. You know, utility doesn't need to be a gigantic festival, you know, in Hong Kong, but it could be utility in so many different ways. It could be just a Zoom call with somebody that you really vibe with. It could be a book. It could be so many different things. You know, I feel like, and I'm learning that, you know, I'm learning that utility doesn't need to be a thing, but it could also be an experience. It could be a, you know, there's so many other ways of looking at utility. And utility was a four-letter word for us in 2021. Artists were so offended. Oh, I do not offer utility. Art is the utility. Art is the utility. That is 100% of a fact. But also, you know, you have to look at it from, you know, from a consumer point of view, from a collector's point of view, and I like to think of myself as being a little sensitive to, you know, those kinds of things, because I am also a collector and a participant in this ecosystem.
I remember the first time that an artist on If You Know, You Know said the word utility, you know, including it on the art, right? Said something to like, well, I've embraced utility, or I offer utility, and I've just about fell out of my chair, because that was unheard of. I want to ask you on that note, you know, you've gone through the highs and lows now of our NFT cycle market. What has changed in you? Like, where have you grown? Who are you now as opposed to who you were in 2021?
I'm calmer. I would like to think of myself, I'm more calm. I'm more measured. I am definitely, somebody who's learning and growing with the space. It's not perfect, but I'm making progress, and I love the kind of progress that I'm making. And who I am now is I am valuing scarcity. I am not somebody who's been dropping a lot lately, but what I'm dropping and what I'm thinking of dropping, which is coming next week actually, is I'm tying digital collectibles with a physical, something that I've never done before. Like, it's not the art that you're getting from the physical, but something that a physical product with the art on it, with the IP, with my IP on it. So it's something that I'm exploring. It's going to be a very, very small, so the collectible is going to be free to claim. And, out of which, the digital will be free to claim. Well, for the physical, there'll be just a portion of that, which will unlock a physical. And then, we could do that. So that is going to come up perhaps in the next couple of weeks. And I'm very excited about that, because those are things that I've never done before. So I am looking at, my early work, which I did as, my entry level point, the marker in my timeline when I just entered NFTs. What I'm doing now is I'm more measured in what I'm dropping, very mindful about what I'm dropping, because I'm mindful that people don't have the kind of liquidity that they had before. Also very mindful that my collectors need to make money so that they can be thriving in this ecosystem, and not just the artists thrive in the ecosystem. So that is something I am extremely mindful about, because unless all of us thrive, none of us thrive. So it has to be a two-way street for both the collector and the artist. Thirdly, I am also, looking at things that I've not done before. So it is taking risks. It is maybe playing with technology that I've not done before, working with companies that I align with. Looking at, a body of work that perhaps has been inspired by this whole journey. So, those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at now. I like to think of myself as calmer. I'm more measured, and I'm definitely intentional and purposeful about how I'm going forward.
Well, we want to be intentional about supporting you. How can we do that?
I sometimes support comes in so many different forms, and support doesn't really mean a purchase. And I, unfortunately, for artists, we always think that support means a purchase, but support could just be a tweet. Support could be, Holly just bought something that I had just very excitedly put up. Holly is here. I just wanted to shout her out. She's always been a collector, somebody that I like to call my friend, somebody, we are in the same age group. We have so many things we have in common. I haven't met Holly in person ever, but I just feel this kinship with, with Holly, with Janine, with yourself. And the fact that you show up, the fact that you comment sometimes, on a really bad day, and it really makes such a huge difference. I feel like I get a lot of what the journey that you've gone through, Belle, sometimes, or, you know, Holly gets what I'm talking about. And that is a huge amount of support. And of course, everybody likes when somebody buys their painting or when they buy somebody's drop. But, you know, I've learned from Janine that, you know, being somebody's champion right from day one and showing up when there is no ask is also very important. I don't have an ask. And I just love the fact that, you know, people show up even when I have, you know, have nothing to ask you to do. And that is important. And I pay attention to that. And I want to be one of these people who show up without having, you know, when you don't need anything. I just want to show up because I love you.
That, you know what? It's people like you that make the world go round, honestly, right? I think that showing up when without asking anything and when no one has asked it of you and you still show up and you do it with a smile on your face, that is what attracts good people. So continue to do you. We are so happy to like spend an hour with you. Again, I started off the show by saying that you are one of those souls that are just such a nice person, such a welcoming person. The vibes that you send out into the world come back to you 10 freaking fold. And I hope that you see that like again and again and again. And thank you to everybody who was here joining us today. I hope the same thing for you, because again, you could have been anywhere else and you were here with us. So thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. If this is your first time joining us, we do, if you know, you know, show every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. Next week, we are going to have the Miami Ape joining us, and also Leslie Monta. If you know her, if you know both of those women, those are also two powerhouse women in the space. Super excited for that. And then the following week, we have Luca next. So, you know, every single week we have a really exciting, fun show of the shakers and movers and participants of the NFT and digital art space. So I'm super, super happy that I get to spend this time with you. Also, make sure that you look at the pinned post so that you are claiming today's POAP or getting today's POAP. And the instructions on how to do so are on that. Make sure that you are following everybody in this room, because we are all one big happy family. And thank you for showing up and for retweeting it. I appreciate it. Ishita, is there anything that I didn't ask you about today that you want to touch on before we jump off?
No, I just wanted to say a big thank you to everyone. I mean, you know, most of the people who are in this space today, right now, right here, are exactly the kind of people who show up without having an ask, who are always giving. I know Rebecca is always, always there, present, giving, you know, opportunities to others, you know, highlighting others. Janine, everybody here who's, you know, showed up is, you know, my kind of people, and yourself too, Belle. It just, you know, sometimes, you know, just these little things make such a difference. I mean, I'm actually a guest on a space after a long time, because I'm usually a listener most of these days, and just, you know, it just brings back so many feelings and so many emotions today. And the fact that I get to do it with you, somebody that I absolutely love and adore, is just the icing on the cake. So thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure and honor is mine, seriously, 100%. So, all right, that is going to be it for today's show, everybody. Hey, hit us up if you have any questions about IP, because that got my mind thinking, should we have a show specifically about that as it relates to artists? I think that is such a good, important topic, right? Yeah, I'm seeing some good positive emojis on here. Let me get my mind on that. And so let's see if we can whip something up on that, because I think that would be really, really good. Rebecca, I'm going to be tapping you on the shoulder for that too, because you are such a freaking source of information, like a wealth of information. So, all right, everybody, that is it. Thank you for joining us. We do this show every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you didn't know, now you know. I'll see you guys next week. Have a good one, everybody.